Welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. As always, you can follow me on the Everything app at jwright929. You can listen to us on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. If you're away from the radio dial, though, you can stream us on the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. We are also streaming live on the iHeartRadio app, as well as the TuneIn Radio app. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. And off the top, we do have to give a very quick shout out to the man, the myth, the legend, Brad Carson. Happy birthday to Brad. It's always a good one.
Happy birthday to Brad. Sound like they had a lovely evening last night. So
big 5-0.
Big 5-0. Hey, listen. It's the new 40. As I say, as I'm significantly closer to 40 than I am to 30, which is always a depressing one. So enjoy that. You got that to look forward to. My company, as he is each and every Thursday on the program, I normally would be looking at him on Google Meet. However, George, I've had that thing happen where like 8 different updates are necessary. So I couldn't just click on launch meeting.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm waiting to look at him as he's on ESPN 8, The Oat Show. But he, of course, is David W. Cobb. You
there
can, of course, follow him on the Everything app at David W. Cobb. CBS Sports, college basketball, college football writer. Good day, sir.
Hey, good day, Jeffrey. How you doing?
Is that some Evan Maya merch?
Yeah, shout out. My guy, Evan Maya.
Shout out, Mia. I didn't realize he had a merch store. Good for him.
I spent so much time on his website.
I didn't know evanmia.com was a lifestyle brand.
It is now. He comps me a sub. Dude, he's like the best of the best. I've gotten to know him a little bit. See him at the Final Four every year. Great guy. Great site. Great this time of year. If you're a Tigers fan trying to get in the nitty gritty of the transfer pickups and the portal and everything, really good resource.
No, the website's awesome. I just didn't know he was in the merch game.
I know. Yeah, well, I love the hat. It's the rope hat, and it's got that. It's the nice. You're gonna see me wear this at Sweetens Cove. It's got the nice athletic sort of texture to it. It's really nice.
Cobb, I got bad news for you, buddy.
What's that?
I'm not sure you're a rope hat guy. I think you got the same problem I do. Like, what? Let me guess. What are you, about a 7.25?
My head's too big or too small.
No, too small. Something. We can't really wear much other than the dad hats.
Yeah. So yeah, the hats sometimes are a little tall on me. I don't know what the deal is.
Yeah,
but I love to wear hats.
It's got the high crown on it.
They used to call it profile in the business. I don't know if that's still what it was, but same thing. Like I could even being a baseball guy, I always look so dumb in a flat bill, and I feel like the rope hats are like the next evolution of the flat bill. And I can't wear those, and I can't wear like the traditional white frat star visor. I'm not talking I'm talking about the true Steve Spurrier golf visor. I'm not talking about this new, like the ones that basically are just hats like that they cut off. I'm talking.
Oh, you're talking about the big wide.
Who's my boy from,
Keith Mitchell on
tour.
Yeah,
Keith Mitchell. Yeah, I was saying from Chattanooga Baylor.
Yeah, well, it's tough. I'm a big hat guy because my hair is unruly, so I got to have a way to restrain it sometimes, and the hats are the best way to do that.
Yeah, does your wife get upset at the hat collection?
No, she actually gets on me because I wear hats until they're so dirty that they're like gross, and she's like, you need to get a different hat. And so I get about 2 hats a year, and then I wear them until they're just sweated to pieces.
Yeah,
and then I get.
I'm the same way, and I don't know. There's something about like I have a tough time just throwing away hats.
I do too.
I was like, you don't understand.
Value.
I shot 78 in that.
Exactly. I birdied like, number 8 in this.
Yeah,
hat.
You don't understand. Like, yeah, I fired a lot of 93s in that hat too, but I also shot 78 in it.
Yeah, they were like. Like really sentimental when I was younger. Like I would hold on to hats when I was a kid for like 5-6 years, just wear them until they. Oh, you remember when we were young? It used to be cool to have like the frayed ends on the bill, the frayed ends of the bill a little bit. It was like a sign of like, oh yeah, like this is like a real time-worn hat.
Yeah, it was the
I played travel ball because I wore this hat for 30 games and got it dirty.
It became the precursor to trucker hats. Like that was, I knew those days were over. It's like when they started selling jeans with like pre-torn. When you started being able to see the hats that were pre-frayed, you're like, all right, well, this movement's over.
Well, I may or may not, as a kid, have gone out on the driveway and like rubbed the bill against
Of course. So it's like breaking
the pavement.
In. I can't remember. It's been on, I don't remember if it's because I was watching a baseball game. Someone's got this new ad about breaking in your glove. And it's the first like effort I've seen at the actual, like, we get a little too syrupy sometimes with baseball. We get a little too romantic. There was something about the breaking in the glove ad that I was like, man, that hit me in the feels. Like,
yeah, Adidas has a good one now, too, a basketball ad of the kid out in the driveway.
With the dog. Yeah.
I like that. I thought that was pretty good.
Nope, I agree. That's a good one because this is also play-in tournament time is also, all right, it's like the when you watch the play-in games or whatever, the first four.
First four, yeah.
Like, all right, what are they about to shove down our throats for the next, like, you know, for the next 2 months? There was, I do think the Adidas one's good. You're right. I got no idea. What is the connection between this Wild West outdoorsman riding his horse in the NBA playoffs? Is it picking the right horse? I'm lost on this one.
Is it that it's like the long haul, like, just a journey to the championship.
And why is a dude riding a horse?
I have no idea. I was thinking I think it was another Adidas one. The Travis Hunter ads that they were running for a little bit there, during football season. I thought those were pretty good.
I think I know the one that is going to make us want to blow our brains out.
What is it?
We saw this a little bit during the tournament, but I think it not at this level. Is it Carvana or CarMax? Paige Buchers, they got the band playing like a Texas rodeo song, and she's trying to like sell it. It's like one of the secondary market car companies. I don't know if it was CarMax or if it was Carvana. I want to say it was CarMax. And like she's like strolling through the parking lot. That song is so annoying, and that whole spot is going to get so annoying.
Yeah. I was thinking about the horse one, though. Could it be a sign of respect to the trailblazers? You know, the horse is out blazing a trail. As a Memphis guy, I respect what the trailblazers did the other night, beating the Suns. So maybe I'm just seeing some correlation there.
We're hoping. I think Drew worked out implied probabilities. I think he said something. We have a 78% chance of having a second lottery pick because
we just need one of those teams to lose on Friday night. That's going to mean that's right up there with the Jazz game from a week or so ago when we were talking about, basically the tanking Super Bowl.
And by the way, that game didn't disappoint. That was one of the
criteria.
It's been so brutal. That really was after that game, I felt better.
I felt great.
Maybe not quite playoff win, but certainly, you remember like when the Grizzlies beat the Spurs to go play the Warriors? Was that 21?
Yeah.
I think I was just as happy as I was after that Spurs game.
Yeah, it was big. It was huge, man. You get that boost in the odds. And then like you're looking at the play-in and you're thinking, odds are tough here because you need these teams to lose twice. Well, they both completed the first leg. I mean, I'm a huge fan right now of Charlotte against Orlando. I'm a huge fan. I mean, I'm going to be rooting for Golden State against Phoenix on Friday night. Like, it takes a lot to make me the Warriors.
So, no, I'm with you. That is, well, Orlando will have happened first, correct?
So, but wouldn't it be great if both of them lost?
So, if both lose, you still get the better one. Yes, it is true. But if Charlotte wins, I feel like it's going to take the pressure off of me. But now you bring up a good point. I think I might enjoy watching the Thunder just beat up on the Warriors.
Oh, yeah, it would be a win-win. Okay, not only do you get the extra crack at the apple in terms of the lottery, But then, yeah, then you get to see the Warriors just go out and get their brains caved in by a full-strength Oklahoma City team.
God, I was so annoyed with the Clippers last night.
What do you like?
Well, I kind of think I didn't actually hate the Clippers-Suns matchup. The problem I feel like with Warriors-Suns is they kind of do the same thing, but the Suns are not as old.
Yeah, but at the same time, like you look at Steph Curry in a must-win.
Yeah, but what do you think that ankle feels like today?
Yeah, but it's Steph Curry. Like, I'll take my chances.
Well, I'll tell you what else was annoying. I thought when Steph went to the locker room, I thought they were waving the white flag. And, I mean, I guess credit to the Warriors. I mean, really credit to Porzingis. I thought Porzingis was great.
Yeah.
But well, I really did think they were waving the white flag, and then they could not. The Clippers just refused to put them away.
No, I didn't really like have a major preference in terms of who I hope beats the Suns. I actually kind of was leaning towards Golden State, thinking, all right, like I just trust that Draymond and Curry are going to find a way, unless they're thinking about it like you and I are, and they're thinking Cancun, and they're thinking, yeah, but we don't want to have to mess with Oklahoma City.
Why even win last night then? I mean, I guess you could make the argument the Kawhi thing. Were you watching pregame? I'm not saying you should have been.
I was assembling a very large cobalt shelf in my garage. I had it on.
Okay, did you catch the graphic of Steph Kawhi head to head? They flashed
is there a beef there? Why bring it up?
They flashed the graphic and I didn't have time to go back because I was like, I was assuming it was postseason head-to-head. Kawhi leads 24-15. I was like, that cannot be right.
Well, you got to remember, though, there have been
their timelines didn't really line up. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when the Spurs were...
There's been some relatively bad Warriors basketball over the last 7 or 8 years. I mean, they had their dynasty run, and then they had the less expected title of 22. But I mean, there have been some less than stellar Golden State teams, and some teams on which Steph Curry has been out there playing when he hasn't had the help that he really needs. So I'm not shocked by that.
But I was thinking about it. It's like, how many? Because I do remember before the Warriors were the Warriors, their kind of little coming out party was before they fired Mark Jackson. Remember, they played the Spurs at peak of the power Spurs in like, I want to say maybe 2013-ish. And then, you know, they played them very competitively.
So if you think about like, Kawhi at like peak Spurs, Kawhi versus like peak Warrior, like, you know, the peak Warriors dynasty. Like, yeah, no doubt. I'm sure in those matchups, Steph surely had a better record against Kawhi on the aggregate. But I mean, you look at where they've gone since. I mean, in the years post dynasty, like it's actually baffling to me on some level that the Golden State core has stayed together in terms of Steph and Draymond being there and Klay for as long as he was, when there's been diminishing returns. Like, on the one hand, like, I applaud Steph for not just going ring chasing or whatever, trying to bully his way into making the Golden State organization into something that he wanted. But like, at the same time, did we waste the prime of one of the all-time greats because he didn't go the route that so many superstars go now? He didn't go the LeBron route of, I'm going to force my way to a different location to serve my own interests, right? Like, it was a different approach by Steph, and I don't know if it was the approach that maximized his ability to get rings.
I wonder if there's something there about, because I think we can all agree at this point, LeBron's his own franchise, right? And I do think, I'm confident you can put LeBron just about anywhere in that team. Prime LeBron. I'm not saying 41-year-old LeBron. But prime LeBron.
Well, they're about to find out. Right. They're about to find out what 41-year-old LeBron can do single-handedly carrying a team. Yeah.
I don't know if Steph is the same in the sense of you put Steph on any team, it clearly makes them better. But does it make them a contender? I don't know. I think part of it with the Warriors is like, the team was built in his image.
Well, we've seen it. We've seen what a team with Stephen Curry as like their singular force is over the last handful of years. I mean, he's been relatively durable for a guy entering his, what, now late 30s?
I'm not even necessarily saying number of games, but like, I think the other thing is, look at, he's been on bad Warriors teams. LeBron, I don't think, has ever played 82 or a majority of the season and been as bad as some of these teams that Steph's played on have been.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think your team has the same floor nor the same ceiling and with Steph.
The reason why I brought that up is if you're Steph and you know this team's been built in my image, like, does that prevent you from leaving? And then I think the other aspect of it is you know, we'll never know, but I guarantee you Steph made a lot of money off the basketball floor by being in Silicon Valley.
Oh, without a doubt. Like, there's something to be said for that corporate relationship, and then it's what you missed out on in the transfer portal era of a guy sticking around, building the relationships. Like, I'm not saying there's no value in staying in one place, but it just makes you wonder if Steph had been a ring chaser he's a ring chaser in the sense of he works relentlessly. He still tries and is striving to be his best into his late 30s at a time when most have aged out and he's still really good. So, but he's not a ring chaser in the sense of, all right, I can't do it here. I'm gone. Right. Like, and they've tried, like they went out and got Jimmy Butler, you know, I mean, they've done things over the years to like try to get back, but I mean, it was always obvious, at least to me, it felt like that once that 22 title happened, it was, you know, you had Klay was just on his last leg.
No, I mean, I think I told you in real time, like the 22 championship to me felt like the 2019 Masters for Tiger. Like in the end, people will talk themselves into it being the start of another run. But really what it was an all-time great team, just like an all-time great player. Summoning it one last time.
Yeah, so we just need him to summit one last time tomorrow night to get rid of the Suns in this thing. So come on, Steph. Well, let's go Draymond. Come on, Steve Kerr. I'm a big fan of the
Kerr. I don't know if I can get there. The only way I can get there is if the Magic win. And I even know it's better, like, because they're going to get – the Grizzlies will get the better of the picks. So they go into the lottery. I know you want the extra chance. Like, say, I'm not saying maybe I'll root – for the Suns, but I don't know if I can root for the Warriors. I can't. At my core, I can't.
Brother, you've been all, you can. You can do it. Like, we've been all aboard.
I willed this team to the six.
You did.
There were so many people that were laughing at me and telling me what a ridiculous goal this was. Like, no, how you like me now?
So don't stop. Like, don't let off the gas, Jeffrey. We need Charlotte over Orlando, and we need Golden State over Phoenix. So even if the Hornets win and take care of Orlando, like, we want two cracks at the lottery.
You know what else is really crystallizing? Because George pointed this out on Monday. Do you know the team, since we've gone to the flattening, this version of the flattening, which is 2019, the six has never remained at the six?
I know.
The six is either moved up or down.
I want to say, I forgot who posted it. I saw it on Twitter earlier. I think the six is actually the lowest percentage spot.
No, it is. It's well, other than 10 or 11, whatever the last possibility. The floor, I think, is 10.
Right.
And that's like a 0.2% chance. If you threw that one out.
Yeah. It's only
six
like,
is an 8% chance. But that's the other thing that's really crystallizing. Because now we are in the everybody online's like doing 10 tankathons and sharing their results. It's been really great community building. And like every single one you just see is like never stayed at the six. Which I have to ask the question, is the six due?
That's the optimist view of it, right?
I was thinking about this though. If I could offer you the six, lock it in. Would you do it?
Yeah, I love this draft. Like, I'm not going to be disappointed. I'll say that. In all, like, there's very few scenarios where I come out of lottery night being like, oh, man, well, I don't feel as good as I did before about the Grizzlies' future, because I'm a firm believer there is value to be had up and down the board in this draft. Now, we do have some key decisions, like some key stay or goes that will impact what 20 through 30 look like.
Yeah.
Sure. Like, no doubt. There's some of that out there. You know, like if Braylon Mullins stays at UConn for another year, you know, there's Tennessee fans out there talking themselves into thinking Nate Emmitt's going back to college, right? So, like, there are some circumstances. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. But
No, I was actually giving that face to you. You know this fan base better than anyone. Think about all the things that this fan base has talked themselves into throughout the years.
Oh, sure.
Why are you surprised? Like, that was a free space.
I know. It's you know, John Gruden at Calhoun's, right? Like, it's you know, it's just insanity.
This is the fan base that gave us groomers.
So what would it take to get Nate Emmitt back to college? I think moving heaven and earth, and they're already spending a ton of money on the transfer additions. So I'm not saying that's going to happen, but my point as it pertains to the Grizzlies is, okay, I guess if they end up with two cracks at the lottery via their own pick and then via either Orlando or Golden or Phoenix, okay, if their pick falls and then the other pick doesn't pan out quite like we hope, will I be disappointed? Maybe only if some of these guys who you're looking at in the teens and the 20s decide to come back to college, and then all of a sudden it looks more like a 14 or 15 man draft. But like, I mean, this to me feels like a 23, 24 man draft in terms of the actual legitimate lottery level talent that's going to be available on draft night.
So if you use this year's rookie scale, again, who knows? And we're going to get into this part of it during the next segment about the whole financials of it all. But let's say that the reports of who's my Kansas big that went to Louisville?
Florey Badunga.
Badunga. Let's say Badunga got $5 million. All right, let's say that's the number. In this year's rookie scale, pick 14 is $4.9 million.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Nate is slotted to go above that. So,
right.
I mean, Nate seems to be, feels like his floor is like 10 maybe, right?
If you're a man, the only reason you would consider coming back to college
you
is
just look great in orange.
Well, it's not because, oh, I can make more money at Tennessee in 26, 27 than I could in the NBA, because I just don't think that's true.
No. The idea is I come back, I'm going to make roughly the same amount of money, maybe slightly less this year than I would have in the NBA. But the
and
difference
maybe
is,
I'll be a top five pick next year.
And I honestly think it's Nate is the one person I think you could say this is true about, for sure, at least in my opinion. I'm not saying it would happen, but there is a legitimate universe where Nate comes back, dominates the sport, and he's the number one pick next year.
I wouldn't say it's likely, but I think
that's
top
not,
five is...
That's not insane. But if you're the number one pick, that's $13 million. So now we're doing the math of, instead of being, let's say what, Nate goes 9. You get with that, roughly?
Yeah.
He basically, he would have given up about a $1.3 million this year in the event that he would make 5 in college, and then he would make nearly $14 million in year one. So he's basically doubled his money. Like, there is a strategy to it. Now, to your point, like, I don't know what the percentage chances are, but like, he's the one guy where you can see NBA scouts, if he went another year because of his size projections, like, you could see where they'd still take him number one.
Put another 10 pounds of muscle on that guy. Let him continue to develop. The ceiling on Nate Emmitt is not the question. It's just, is this the right time in a draft full of guys who look like they're going to be ready to contribute and be real NBA players pretty early? he's an outlier in the sense of he's always been viewed as a long-term project. So you give that project another year to develop, come out again next year. I mean, I think there's some validity to the idea. It's just hard for me to imagine.
And also, like, that also makes the assumption that there are no risks. Like, he could also go back, even if he got, like, an insurance policy for an injury, he could have an injury that changes the outlook of his career. Like,
I think that's the reason why you don't. I think that's the reason why you
He's a top 10 pick, so you go. But, like, I could at least entertain the idea. All right, one thing that we don't really have to entertain the idea of anymore of, and not that we really were, but the Grizzlies' future with Ja Morant. So we have the Tim McMahon, and I believe Michael C. Wright also contributed the story over at ESPN.com. And this is no criticism of the writers, because we're not the audience. But I have found in a lot of these ESPN kind of timeline stories, you don't really learn anything new. But what I do think it has always served, because Tim, it feels like, is the ultimate documenter of Ja. What I do think that they've always done, though, is if you need, like, one source to go, like, for a timeline, like, I've always thought those stories are good. See if you correct me if I'm wrong. Here was the only detail I saw that I didn't know prior. And we knew, obviously, that the Grizzlies had tried to trade Ja, but they were getting the negative return. The only detail that I saw is they put a team on it. The Kings were the team that inquired about Ja, but in the course of the negotiations, they said, you got to throw in a pick. And then that was when the Grizzlies were like, thanks, but no thanks.
Well, I think we knew that there was going to
be a team, but I didn't see it. We knew there was a cost. We knew there was negative value, as they refer to it. I did not. And the Kings were one of those teams that had been bandied about, but we did, I felt like, confirm that it was indeed the Kings that set the negative market.
Well, the graph that I found, and I'm looking at this, trying to find hope. and so the graph that I gravitated to, maybe about midway through the story on ESPN.com, here it is. It's several executives from other teams polled by ESPN believe the Grizzlies should have better luck finding a destination for Morant this summer, with the caveat that Memphis shouldn't expect to get much value in return. But I read that and I'm like, all right, like, hey, shouldn't expect to get much value. Hey, that I'm fine with that. I just don't want to give something up for you to take on this guy. That, let's be real. I mean, I still think he has potential. Is he going to be an NBA MVP like we once imagined? No. Could he one day get back to being an all-star in the right environment? Yeah. So, like, anyway, I was encouraged by that paragraph, because, and then there's also this, like, this executive that's quoted in there saying, yeah, I can see some teams talking themselves into Ja Morant. And I don't care if you don't get three first-round picks and, you know, some young promising draft, like recent lottery pick. That's fine. I just don't want to give up something to get rid of this guy.
And I think that they would wave and stretch him before they would give up a first-round pick to get rid of him.
I mean, it feels like that's got to be on the table. I mean, that's a massive
I'll say this. I don't think it's 0.0. Do I think it's likely? Of all the decisions, I think it's more likely they would do that than they would attach a significant asset to get rid of him.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big contract to eat, because you're looking at two more seasons of $40+ million. I mean, that's a lot to wave and stretch. But what's the alternative? If it's giving up something, giving up a draft asset, or continuing on where he can't play basketball and you're just stuck with him, like, that's not a viable option. So, I mean, I guess you'd have to think wave and stretch is among the possibilities. But even if it's just like, hey, we'll just give you some dead salary and take him off your hands, and you get, you know, you Grizzlies take back a deal that expires 26, 27, probably two deals, given the cost, or three deals or something, you know, great. That's better than giving up a first round pick.
Yeah, the quote that I'm with you, because I found myself, even at the deadline, thinking, man, if the cost was so low, one of these teams should have just fired. You know what I mean? Like, the cost was, I get it. You're still got to pay the $41 million, but I'm kind of with this executive that was cited. Maybe I'm naive, but that type of talent doesn't grow on trees, especially if he's going to be in a different place and he's motivated. Okay, I'll show you guys. I could see some teams talking themselves into it and at least kicking the tires. It's like, I just think that there's so many teams that are just kind of toiling in nothing. I do think change of scenery is going to help. Now, that brings up the whole question, though, of was the sudden end of the era avoidable? And you see if you agree with this. I think mistakes were made along the way. Organizationally, I think the team coddled him way too much, and I think that was a negative benefit. I think Ja had maturity issues, and I think that was a problem. But in the end, the real reason they're pulling the plug, like, I kind of view it as those are like messy family dynamics, but the real reason that they're pulling the plug, he can't stay on the floor, and he's not gotten better. But primarily, he can't stay on the floor. And Harrington laid it out as such 2 weeks ago. There were three concerns about Ja coming into the draft. Number one, size. Number two, defense. And number three, the inability to shoot from range.
They're all still issues. He went 3 for 3 on checking the box in terms of the things you were worried about. Was it worth it? I still think so.
I totally agree. Should they have taken R.J. Harper? R.J. Barrett?
Right. I mean, there was no alternative. No. They made the only choice there was to make. But it is unfortunate that all three of those issues manifested themselves in very harmful ways. I mean, the size, I think more so than anything, is the biggest issue. Not because small people can't hoop, but because slender frame people who play the way Ja Morant plays are injury prone.
If you cannot stretch the floor with your shot at that size, you are asking for injury prone.
Yeah. So, and then the defense. I mean, in what world did we ever expect? Do you expect? I mean, it's part of the reason we have the conversation about Steph Curry and whether or not his ring.
I don't care that
the same as LeBron.
I don't care that there are internet haters out there that keep putting out video that Acuff is a traffic cone. I don't care.
Yeah, like on a certain level, if you're good enough offensively as an undersized guard, your defensive shortcomings are forgiven. And that was always going to be the case with Ja Morant. You were never going to cast him as a lockdown defender. You were never going to pull up 2K and see that clamps icon next to Ja Morant. So like on a certain level, that was one that you just understood was going to be the way it is. But the three-point shooting, you would have hoped they could have developed that. I mean, the shot was just never aesthetically pleasing. It was never a built-in a laboratory sort of form. It was always a little bit of a herky-jerky motion. I always go back to
my brother who played AAU and played pretty competitively. He had the best take ever. You can never trust a guy that shoots with his elbow out.
True.
I mean, it's just anyone that's got that chicken wing, he's like, can't do it.
So I think a part of it, like what they end up getting for Ja, it's like an organization's ability, as this exec says, to talk themselves into it. Okay, well, maybe we can fix Ja Morant's shot. Or, oh, okay, maybe we can cast him in a role where he doesn't feel like he's got to get all the way to the basket, right? Like, can you, it's the same thing we do every NFL draft season with the toolsy quarterback. Like he may not have the level of college efficiency.
Yeah, wait till we get Tony Richardson in our program.
Exactly. Like, we can make Antonio Richardson into a quarterback. We can fix his form and his, you know, his,
he's got good
footwork.
Form. He has a pretty throwing motion. He has horrific, like, footwork. But, like, if he's just standing at the 20 and warming up, just throwing, and you're not watching him take his drop, he has a beautiful throwing motion.
1-1. And it's like, you know, it's the same deal with Will Levis. It's like,
Levis always had you want a real take? Levis was too worried about the beach muscles to have a good throwing motion.
Yeah, you're probably right on that.
Tebow, same thing. Those guys got too big up top. Also, Tebow low-key had Dez arms, T-Rex arms. Like, I don't think people realize that.
Really talk, did anyone ever really talk themselves into Tim Tebow?
Like, Josh McDaniel.
I know, but it wasn't like they...
Josh McDaniel literally, like, there was a... I remember when we used to read ESPN the magazine?
Yeah, okay, I guess
there was like
a
big
like first
feature there. About McDaniel was, like, in the draft room talking about all the development plan that he had for Tebow and how he was going to turn him into this pure, like, thrower. It's like, nah, man. Like, I Josh Allen's an outlier. Like, this idea you teach accuracy, like, no.
But we just need one delusional
and also, Josh Allen didn't throw it like, you know, didn't throw it like a guy that's just picking up a football for the first time.
Right. And then the interesting thing, though, when you have the discussion about quarterbacks and then the John Morant comparison and talking yourself into it, a lot of times with quarterbacks, it's like, well, we gotta make sure he's smart enough to understand the playbook and like has the IQ to like get it. John Morant has like an amazing basketball IQ, feel for the game, like understanding of situations. Like from that standpoint, like that box has always been. I mean, the passes this guy was throwing as a rookie in the NBA.
And
next level stuff.
The way he manipulated defenses, I agree. I just wonder though. If he doesn't shoot better, is it like in the end, like we can go through every issue we want, but the biggest issue is he's not even scoring. He's not even efficient in the paint anymore. Like when
the Russell Westbrook comparisons turned out to be a little too close to home. He's basically just scrawny Russell Westbrook with off the court problems.
Yeah. You know, the other one that's driving me insane. There's so many. A lot of local takes that he's AI, and it's like, as a lifelong AI guy, like, y'all, he played through 7 seasons, including a year in which I think he missed 30 games. Allen Iverson played 160 more games through 7 seasons than John Morant has. So basically,
how many times did he dunk? That, you know,
well, not AI. I mean, so it's obviously a different era. His three-point percentage was worse than you remember, but it's such a different era, like where...
Right, so that sort of player worked better in that era, too.
Well, and also...
And my point
like,
about, the, my
like,
point
I
about
think,
the dunks is basically that like he didn't put his body on the line the same way.
But like I think the other key difference is if Iverson plays in this era where there's the emphasis on take every open three, I think his percentages go up.
Right.
Like, he was a better natural shooter than Jai is.
Yeah, it's a fairly... I mean, it's an okay comparison, but there's certainly differences there, both in era and in terms of the player.
Yeah. And it's also, it's like... Because I do agree with you. Like, in the end, if it's a pass-fail question, was the Morant era a success, I still say yes. But there is like something deeply unsatisfying about the fact that even though I believe they're making the right decision pulling the plug, it is insane to think about like it basically took what 5 seasons for it to fall apart.
Yeah, that's the thing is like it wasn't sudden. Like it was a
no. That's the other thing about whenever you read these McMahon timeline pieces, it's like. God, like when you just like go back, it's
and
like
he didn't even get into like the Josh Holloway situation. Like,
No. He simply got into what the Pacers
started, basically.
The Pacers bus when allegedly Deepak and crew were using the laser pointer at the bus. Shotgun Willie's in Denver. The Instagram Live. After that was the other thing I forgot is I think he said it was 2 days after the Lakers series. Like it was, that was such like a, like unsatisfying end to that season. And then like right after that, she's like, oh my God, what are we doing here?
Yeah. 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 That's, I think, probably the tipping point for a lot of people in terms of, oh, we got a problem here. So yeah, I think if it wasn't a situation, Jeffrey, where the Grizzlies are looking at potentially having two lottery picks in this 2026 NBA draft, like that is the beacon of hope. I mean, sure, Cedric Coward is a beacon of hope, right? Like you got a few interesting players on this roster, but it's those two lottery picks in this draft, in this upcoming lottery. Just you remember, right? Coming out of the dismantling of the core four and the trading of Marc Gasol and then the uncertainty around the future of Mike Conley, this is a similar situation where it's basically like, all right, time for the lottery balls to do their thing because we need help.
I mean, I feel better about today than I did then.
With two first round picks and then already see that back then you didn't have any pieces in place, really.
No, and then like
you could say Jaren. You had Jaren in
but
place.
Like I'm that thinking about the summer before they get Jaren. You knew you were getting that pick, and then I think they were fifth and got fifth, or did someone pass them?
Jaren was the fourth pick.
But what I'm saying is, they weren't the worst team in the league, right? They didn't have the worst record. They did not jump up, and I can't remember if somebody jumped them.
But even coming out of that draft, you know, people weren't like super excited about Jaren because.
No, we told the story. Jason and John hosted a draft party at the Bluff, rest in peace. And putting it kindly would say the audience reaction was mixed.
Right. He is a role player as a freshman at Michigan State. Didn't show a ton of the perimeter shot. But then by Christmas, it was like, oh.
It was the first summer league game. Remember, he hit like seven threes in that Utah summer league game. Everybody's like, hell yeah. Like we talked ourselves into it. All right, we got to take a break. We'll, of course, talk more Grizzlies throughout the rest of the program. But we come back. My buddy Chase Parham spoke with the Ole Miss Chancellor, Glenn Boyce. And Cobb, a lot of the entire discussion was largely based on NIL Go, the CSC, like where is this going? Because one of the huge questions is going to be, what about these deals? Are they that are getting held up and how is it going to impact it? I want to tell everybody about these comments because I thought it was interesting because Boyce I wouldn't consider as a protector of the god. This has been somebody I think that has embraced the new era and improving the university. So I found these comments interesting. I'll talk about it with Cobb next. Right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. My buddy Chase Parham over at Rebels 247 has had an hour-long sit-down with Glenn Boyce, who's the chancellor at Ole Miss. Boyce is also on the NCAA Board of Governors and the Southeastern Conference Executive Committee. And Parham writes that gives him a front-row seat to the changes and the reasoning behind them. He also adds that the revenue-sharing system that allows a school to pay up to $20.5 million during this athletics year to its athletes started in August. And all payments outside of that number must be submitted to and approved by NIL Go, the Deloitte executed system to ensure fair market value and that contractual terms are met. Here are a couple of the comments that Chase singled out from his conversation. Quote, when college athletics got involved and began to realize that we can, in essence, start using pay for play, we turned it into pay for play. As presidents and everybody else with the elixir of winning wrapped around us, we let it go and it went. We found ways to make NIL something that people didn't conceive of it being originally. Think about how few NFL players have sponsorship deals. Last I heard, around 13% of NFL players have deals. How many NFL pros do you see doing television ads? How many football players have an NIL deal? See, it doesn't really work the way that it was designed to be. Okay, so there are a couple of questions here, Cobb. I think we can agree if you're strictly saying the money that is being paid to student athletes, if it is based on their Q rating, so what they are, what their name, image, and likeness is available to the market, I think most would agree probably not fair. Not would be. But this is kind of the larger complication. it is, name, image, and likeness was not designed for pay-for-play. It was designed to capitalize on your status and your ability to sell a product. Mm-hmm. But you really do have a problem squaring away with how much money college football and to a lesser degree college basketball makes and the labor not being a part of it. I do understand that name, image, likeness is not meant to be salary and pay for play. I would also argue, well, what did you expect when you allowed it? Like, it was always going to be pay for play. No duh. But I think it is interesting that it seems like now the biggest concern among coaches, I think back to, did you read C.J. Moore's story yesterday at The Athletic about basketball?
I did. One assistant coach in that story used the word laundering. Like, we have to figure out how to launder this money.
Well, what I thought was fascinating is it went a little counterintuitive to what we understand now. One of the big problems that I think schools are certainly concerned about is donor fatigue. But the thing that I thought was interesting was the GM said, you know, getting the money isn't really the problem. He's like, we're always kind of able to get the money. It's the, to your point, how do we get the money cleanly?
Yeah. Well, so the biggest question right now in this college basketball cycle, one, maybe in that, for that assistant coach or GM, getting the money isn't the problem. I think for some, that is still a problem. And they're basically like promising third party stuff that they don't know for sure that they're actually going to be able to follow through on. Because you look at Flory Badunga going to Louisville, they paid him $5 million straight out of rev share. That's basically probably 60% of their entire rev share. So it's like they, what they probably did is probably like 20% rev share, 80% third party, something along those lines for a lot of these guys. But the third party stuff technically has to be approved by the College Sports Commission. So it's like, what if they crack down? What if they get their act together? What if all of a sudden they start trying to say, no, this isn't legit? And then all of a sudden, that's where you can see the whole thing blow up, because the rev share tallies for most Power Conference basketball teams is $4 to $5 million, maybe, if that. Oh, the Ole Miss story that you're citing from Chase Parham, it's like, it says, you know, three. So $3 to $5 million in rev share, but yet the rosters are 10 to 12. How does that make sense? Right. It's because of the third party that we thought was going to be regulated, and it's not being regulated. So we're promising guys money from third party and just crossing our fingers and hoping that this College Sports Commission doesn't figure out how to regulate it.
Well, and along those same lines, we found ways to make NIL something that people didn't conceive, it would surprise me if we don't experience some significant pain. In the next 6 months, I don't think this is a long time waiting. And just candidly, if you don't see some significant pain along the way over the next six to eight months, then there's a lot of brown paper bags being handed out. Do you think a coach wants to have half his team come in on Monday and say, I don't think I'm playing on Saturday? That's not unrealistic, not in what we've created today. And the thing about it is NIL Go isn't to blame. It's a system that we put in place to ensure that it was fair and a proper system. So the context being, to Cobb's point, what happens when you have a situation where guys that were promised that $5 million, and of that $5 million, only $1 million was from rev share, and the rest were from these deals that don't get approved? Well, what happens when you have the school that goes, until we get this approved, we can't pay you? Now, I would say this. My suspicion is the teams that are relevant and are winning are just going to say, F it. Like, here's your money. Let's go. Where I think this could be a problem, though, is take your run-of-the-mill mid-tier SEC team that's not really playing for anything in October. I don't. The thing is, I hate using names because I don't necessarily think the names are reflective of what the school does or doesn't do. It's a reflection of where the school is. I was talking with Chase and Neil this morning.
Arkansas.
Let's use Arkansas as the example. But let's say flip Arkansas's last 5 years with Ole Miss's last 5 years. I think Arkansas is doing the same thing Ole Miss is doing. I think what's inspired Ole Miss is the winning. And if you're Arkansas and you've had just these wildly, at best, lackluster years, and then you make a relatively uninspired hire, well, yeah, I can see where everybody's sitting there going like, man, I don't know if we're really going to rock the boat and push the envelope to see if we can push our way to 7 wins. You know what I mean? Like, and their win total, I think, is 3.5. So you see what I'm saying? Like, I do think if you're – like, I don't think this is going to be a walkout at Texas Tech. But I could see at these lower to mid-tier SEC programs, I can see where this happens.
So how much money can you stuff in a single McDonald's bag? That, I mean, if you, okay, let's say you ordered
you
two.
You still got Pruitt's number?
Yeah, well, I think he changed it. But if you ordered two Big Mac combos, you know, you get that big bag from McDonald's.
Oh yeah.
How much?
You can do what John Martin does twice a week. You can just order Uber Eats or whatever. He's one of the delivery companies, and they bring you the grocery bag.
Huge bag.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get one little combo and they bring you the huge bag stuffed with napkins and sauces. It's great. But yeah, it's going to get, if the College Sports Commission is in a horrible position, like they're supposed to like figure this out, but they don't have the manpower nor the ability, like the punitive power. They don't have the power to inflict penalties in a way that's going to deter, you know, this insane amount of player compensation. So like we keep hearing this donor fatigue thing, Jeffrey, where is it? When's it coming? Like, it's got to be here, right? Like, I mean, how many times can you go back to the well over and over and over again? I get it. Michigan can probably do it in basketball right now. Indiana can probably do it in football right now. Ole Miss can probably do it in football. Look, hey, we're having the best run of success we've had ever, or at least since, you know, pre-integration. And all of a sudden, like, you know, we got our coach left us. And all